and we're going to be taping the meeting, but it's informal, I think, probably by
standards. Standards and possibly by standards that you're used to in your own communities, but this is going to be the working group that the legislature asked to look at the compensation limit. I know we're all familiar with what the issue is, but we'll just do a little review for the record and introduce myself. I'm Senator Linda Scheid. I live in Brooklyn Park and represent about half of that city and the entire city of Brooklyn Center, northwest suburb of suburbs of Minneapolis. This is coming to the end of my eighth year in the Senate. I served 11 years in the House, but none of it was consecutive. I left and went in the private sector for a while, but I'm back in the Senate. And I don't serve on a local government committee in the Senate. I chair the Commerce Committee, but have served on this when it was, I think it was a commission or something once, the Legislative Commission on LCER, on Employee Relations, and I served on that in the House some years ago and then have served on this since I came to the Senate. And this issue has come up every year, every legislative session, and I think it's been studied before as well, and we're going to try to come to some conclusions and do something about it. So having said that, let me ask everybody to introduce themselves. And I should introduce Greg Hubinger, who is the Director of the Legislative Coordinating Commission, LCC, and has jurisdiction over the administration of this subcommittee.
Sandy
Keene. Is it K-E-E-N-E?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Who is the assistant to Greg at the LCC and provides all the staff work and getting everything ready for us to have in nice, tidy little packets. We appreciate your doing that. And then I'll move to Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Senator Betsy Wergen from District 16, which is most of Sherburne County, all of Mille Lacs, about one-third of Benton, well, about half of Benton, actually, and a third of Morrison. So I have a significant area. I served as a county commissioner prior to being a senator, so I have a kind of a keen interest in this area. I live just south of Princeton, and I live in the district that Sherburne County is projected to double within the next, I think it's 20 years, and Mille Lacs County grow by 60%. So we'll be dealing with a lot of the issues that come up.
I'm Ardell Grady, mayor of Rochester, Minnesota, and it's a privilege to be here today and hope it's okay that I took my jacket off.
I should think, yes.
Is that
yes,
all right?
You don't
okay.
even need to bring it.
All right, good. Thank you. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm the executive director of the Metropolitan Intercounty Association that consists of five collar counties here in the Twin City metropolitan area and seven outstate counties with major urban areas within them.
I'm Kurt Yoakum with the Association of Minnesota Counties and Trade Association representing all 87 counties in Minnesota.
Welcome.
I'm Jill Pettis. I'm the Assistant State Negotiator and Compensation Manager for the state of Minnesota.
Tom Hedges. I'm the City Administrator for Eagan, and I've been in city administration in Minnesota for 32 years, four as City Administrator in St. Peter and 28 a week ago, my anniversary in Eagan.
So. Goodness.
My name is Tom Goodwin. I'm an Apple Valley City Council member. I also have a significant background in local government. I was an assistant city manager in the Illinois area, and I was a budget director in Wisconsin for a while, so varied experience.
We are going to have interesting perspectives. I really appreciate your willingness to be here to serve on this working group, and we'll count on you to, you know, keep us honest and keep us moving forward. Greg, do we want to go over the legislation that brought us here? It's pretty straightforward.
Madam Chair, the third page in your stack of papers is a copy of that portion of the legislation that was passed this last session requiring the study to be conducted. It provides for the LCC, which has delegated all of its responsibilities with regard to these issues to this Subcommittee on Employee Relations, and then the legislation provides for a working group to be assembled to provide input and advice and counsel to the subcommittee. The study by this provision is to include, at a minimum, an examination of local government compensation limits and comparative salary data in other states. The study is to assess the impacts of the cap on salary structures and recruitment and retention. And third, to evaluate alternatives to the compensation limit, including the elimination of the limit. Senator Scheid and I had talked about the agenda for this meeting somewhat a few days ago, and the sense was that we were hoping that this would be an informal discussion and that one, this would also be an opportunity to for you folks with your expertise to bring other issues to the table that should be considered in the study.
We have another member of the Senate who's joined us, Senator Steve Kelly. And Steve, do you want to just introduce yourself, kind of describe your district? And
hi, I'm Steve Kelly. I represent Hopkins, St. Louis Park, and about two-thirds of Golden Valley, and have been on the subcommittee for, I think this is my third or fourth year. I hope we can make progress in taking this issue off our agenda.
Yes. Good luck. Give you some idea where some of us are coming from.
Or we may ask for if there are other issues.
Yeah, I wondered if there are any other issues or things that you think we could squeeze into what the legislature put down for the study. Are there other aspects that you think we should discuss? I don't know if you have the language in front of you. Yes, Mr. Carlson. Keith?
Madam Chair, it's not explicit, but I would like to suggest that the working group consider both the explicit salary cap as well as the cap for purposes of pension administration that essentially is identical but does have a number of both statutory exemptions as well as administrative exemptions, because that subject did come up this past legislative session, and I think the two really are linked.
Pension? Okay. That's appropriate. Anything else that anybody?
Madam Chair, one piece that has been raised by others, and perhaps Representative Krinke is the champion of this, that in thinking about the cap, one side of the equation is that local government salaries are too high. The other side of the equation is that the governor's salary is too low, and that perhaps one part of this discussion ought to be looking at what should be done about the governor's salary and what impact the fact that that hasn't changed since 1998 has on this.
I think what's happened there is that we continue to set salaries with hard and fast numbers and statute, and then you live with it, and you until there's the political will to change it, and that doesn't come around very often. Doesn't happen often. So that's, I mean, I think that's fine. I think we should have a discussion of that. I just think the political reality, unless we set it on some kind of a scale, we're going to have trouble with it down the road. In any case, but so let's look at the December report of 2000. December of 2000 report. It seems like yesterday.
Another document that's in your stack is a report that was done in December of 2000 also by this subcommittee that was looking at this same topic, and was done primarily by legislative staff with input from a lot of the associations, and former Senator Flynn, the chair, convened these discussions that were held in the fall of 2000. Perhaps the most interesting piece for some is the history of this law that begins on the bottom of page 2. It points out that the original limit was first adopted in 1977 and limited just the salaries of local government employees to the salary of the Commissioner of Finance.
There had been no limitation until that point, right?
Madam Chair, that's correct. In 1980, that cap was repealed outright, and then under Senator Perpichev, I believe you've said, Senator Scheid, the law was reinstated in 1983 that limited, again, just the salaries of local government employees to 95% of the salary of the governor, and at the same time, medical doctors were exempted, and the Commissioner of Employee Relations was authorized to approve exemptions. Over the next several years, there were two types of changes made to the law. One was to exempt additional groups from the cap, and the other kind of change that was made frequently was to expand the definition of salary in the definition for local government employees, so that included not only their salary but also all other forms of compensation not provided to other employees. We oftentimes hear that it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, so that in some ways it's unfair that we're comparing the compensation of the local government employee to the salary of the governor, so the pie is bigger at the local government employee end of this. That was actually quite intentional as the legislature was struggling to deal with, in their mind anyway, trying to limit local government salaries, and what they did was to expand the cap to include more items of compensation as local governments moved to increase compensation away from salary and as a way to comply with the cap. So two kinds of changes that have been made over the years to exempt groups and or to expand the definition of what's included in terms of compensation. The last change was made in the 2003 session where employees of public hospitals were exempted from the limit outright. The study went on to look at some salary data that we'd received, or survey data that we received from counties and cities and hospitals, indicating the extent of the number of employees that were approaching the cap, a description of the waiver process that has been in place, and then suggesting a number of options for dealing with the cap, including repeal of it, redefining the cap to exclude certain items, and an approach where of modifying the waiver process to expedite it somewhat. After this report was submitted to the subcommittee adopted a resolution that provided for increasing the cap to 125% of the salary of the governor and including some provisions for changing the process to expedite it some. That bill, I think, passed the Senate but failed on the House floor.
Mr. Huebinger, how do we stack up against other states? What do they do with this?
Madam Chair, as far as anybody has been able to tell, Minnesota is the only state that has a state law that limits the compensation of local government employees.
Is there anything federally? Do we know?
Madam Chair, I think the only federal law limitation is one that limits the amount of compensation that is considered for retirement purposes.
Okay.
There may be others that have a better understanding than I do about how that works.
So, you say Minnesota was out there in front again. And how many states are hurrying to follow us? Haven't heard of any, have we?
No.
So, wish some of our House colleagues were here too. Well, we're going to make this required reading for them in any case. Now, I think this would be good. Did people have this beforehand?
No, we just...
Okay. So it is, I think this is worthwhile to have, you know, a good look at this study from 2000. I don't know. We'll probably hear a lot of the same kinds of things coming. I think you just didn't have legislative involvement other than Senator Flynn convening the meetings. Am I right?
That's right.
Yeah. So, are there any comments about the 2000 report, or was everybody here aware of it, or have you seen it before? So, the interesting. It is interesting. The history is interesting. They just should give us names, names and phone numbers or something, names and addresses of who did this. And we're going to talk about salary surveys and.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Did I just
yes.
Ask,
yes.
When
yes.
was this acted upon again?
Mr. Mayor, this was submitted to the subcommittee in December of 2000.
2000, and then.
It was in the 2001 session where the legislation was considered.
Nothing has happened then since.
There was a bill this last session introduced that would have repealed the cap. It failed in committee in the House. In the Senate, it passed committee and was on the Senate floor but was not taken up.
Okay. So, do you understand a little bit why I want the House members to...
Right, and it's interesting that none are here also.
Which means we all have an obligation to reach them with our message here. So, although I don't want to say that there's any foregone conclusions, I just happen to have been a person who thinks that the cap is...
I don't know one of them. I don't either.
Just doesn't make sense.
Where are they from?
And that it has tended to be not a partisan issue. It has tended to be not partisan. When your predecessor was Dan Stevens, your senator, spoke eloquently about the need to get rid of the cap. I mean, he always did, and he made good. He was always a person who was seen as a person with both feet on the ground and having a lot of common sense. And he would always speak out against why we even have this. Every time we considered waivers, and we have waiver considerations every legislative session, it seems to me. So, but on the other hand, there are no foregone conclusions. Maybe we'll have some new approach or some new way to look at this, and that will come out of this. But I think we will start with the next item on the agenda, the salary surveys, and we have people to.
I think Gene Ranieri is going to.
Mr. Ranieri, are you presenting to us?
Madam Chair, yes.
Yes.
Many of our colleagues also will be making presentations. Laura
yes.
Offadahl from the League of Cities.
So whoever wants to come up, it's just fine.
I think Keith is also going to make
yes.
a presentation. And possibly Laura's going to make two presentations.
Yes, it looks like. Yes, yes.
Yes,
Goodwin.
Madam Chair, I think I would like to take the liberty of start passing the cookies around the table. If that's
I've been looking at them. And
I'm not sure how it works here. So
no, that's fine. We usually don't have them, but sometimes we do.
See, with a budget crunch and all that.
That's right. Well, we'll just add another kind of crunch. So.
Put a quarter to the box, too. I've been looking at him for a half an hour.
I don't know who brought the cookies. Well, Mr. Hubinger brought the cookies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They're very good.
They're good.
Madam Chair, I don't want to interfere with the cookies.
Yes, and other people can certainly partake of them.
My name is... I'll wait to the cookies.
Yes, no. It's when the munching starts, Mr. Ranieri, that you might have to wait. No, we should be fine. So, yes, just identify yourself, and this isn't a formal meeting, but at least for the purposes of the tape, we'll know who is talking.
Madam Chair and members of the study group, my name is Gene Ranieri. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. It's an organization of about 80 cities here in the metropolitan region. Our main purpose is to work on legislation of interest to our cities and also to work with the Met Council on policy plans, development of policies that affect the entire region. In addition to that, we also provide to our members annually studies of a couple items. One item is a personnel study. Another is a salary study of elected officials. And every other year, we do a fee and permits survey to see what cities are charging for permits, all the way from building permits to liquor licenses to picnic permits. You name the permit, we try to cover them, and we will do it by city size, and we publish that every other year. This year, next year, we'll be revising that a little more to update it. but it will be available next year. So that fee and permit study is often looked at by our builder friends. But what I'd like to talk about today is the 2004 Twin Cities Metropolitan Area Salary Survey. It's the 36th survey conducted by our association, the 36th annual survey. It's been conducted since about the late 1960s. We coordinate it. We're not the only ones who are involved. It includes Hennepin County, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Metropolitan Inter-County Association, the Met Council, Ramsey County, and the University of Minnesota all participate in the study. The participation in this instance is they provide funding for the contract. Everyone contributes. We are the lion's share, followed by the league, and then all the other partners contribute based on a formula that we've developed that's been assesses the annual contract. The annual contract is about $54,000 a year. It is done by the Stanton Group. And how it works is that the study begins in the fall of each year, where personnel directors from the cities and the counties, or human resources directors and personnel, sit down in Stanton, and we go over the study in the previous year to see if any jobs should be eliminated, any new jobs should be added, and any additional information should be requested. And once that is done, we bring it to the group of all the personnel and human resource directors in the metropolitan area, go through the information, and start the survey. It is a survey sent to all cities, counties, not only here in the metro area, but some of Keith's members throughout the region. I think Olmsted County is involved, St. Louis County is involved, and some of the other counties who are collar counties. The Metropolitan Airports Commission has also requested information, and also the state of Minnesota in certain positions. What we try to ask for is wage and salary information from about 92 jobs and about 15 job families. Volume 1, which is very thick, and we have it on computer, and we get the copy to Greg, includes information on those jobs. It talks about the weighted, it defines what the job is, so you have an idea of what level it is. It also talks about the number of employees in that class. It talks about the general personnel information, what the requirements are, what the salaries are, what the pay range is. And it breaks it out by all the number of jobs, number of people reporting, but it does it also by group. Group meaning size of city. We have Group 1, which is the state of Minnesota, because we do some surveys of some state jobs. Then we have the Met Council, then we have the counties, and the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Then the remainder are cities by city size. So we have cities from 25,000 to 50,000 and above. So people can break it out by those kinds of groups. What's in there is information about the range of jobs, the actual dollars paid for the positions, weighted and unweighted averages. Well, and then other information about the job. Some of the jobs are part-time, like fire, so it talks about the pension contributions and the payments, characteristics about those jobs. We also have information that compares some of us to information to the private sector, to federal government. We also have information requests this year, how jobs, who reports to whom? Does the planning director report to the city manager or to the mayor? So we ask all those questions, and every year we may add a new question. In Volume 2 of the report, it talks about benefits, and we ask about health plans, dental plans, insurance plans. So Volume 2 outlines what each city offers in terms of health and dental. It also talks about the other benefits cities may offer. For some may offer tuition reimbursement. Some may have bereavement pay. So all that information is there for 108 participants throughout the region. Now, what can this do to help the study? We can identify the number of employees at or near the salary cap. We can tell you what communities they're in, positions they're in, and with some time we can go back to 2000 and do a trend analysis and show you if anyone's been plateaued, because many of us are concerned about a couple items. One is we've heard a lot about compression, that the chief executive officer of the community may be at the cap and his or her directors of departments may be coming up also. The other thing we're seeing is some of the chief executive officers or directors may be, and we have just anecdotal information, we want to go back and look, may be plateaued, may have been frozen at the cap for the last 2, 3, 4 years. So that's what we can tell you. We can give you as much information as possible on that, and we could get it to you within the next week or two. But there is an awful lot of data here. We also can tell you what the average salary increase was throughout the region for public employees, and from 2003 to 2004 is about 2.6%.
That was the salary
increase. And many of our employees are unionized, so they'll be union contracts.
Are there any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. So I do have a copy of my written remarks plus the groups, the size of groups that give the committee.
Okay. When you talk about volume, it's volume 2 or whatever you said. I mean, how big is...
Volume 1 is around 400 pages.
Yeah.
It's big.
We can get a copy. And volume 2 is around 80 pages. We can get a disc to Greg. In addition to that, we also do a salary supplement, which I think Keith's going to talk about, and that's for counties, a county supplement. A lot of that information is applicable to counties.
Okay. And you do this how often?
We do it annually. We started in January. We started in the fall of the prior year, then started in January with a survey, and all the survey data is back, I think, due back in April. Stanton puts it together, and then the survey is sent to us in June. We print it and distribute it, try to get it to everyone by 4th of July.
So I guess I have a question. How does it function then for the municipalities? Does it function as do you see any results? Yeah. Do people look at it and say, gee, we're right in line, or we're out of line, or I mean, I assume that that would be one of the purposes.
My colleagues can answer too. The function is it's information for a lot of our cities. They can compare job classes, job positions. Our friends from the organized union side also looks at it for arbitration and negotiations. We have people. We send copies to all of our city members, and we also have others require copies, particularly unions and others. But I think the function is information. It helps them create jobs, helps them structure or salaries. It's well used. We're very when they're putting together possibly a new position or a position they currently have, they'll see if they're competitive with their market range. They'll look at their own city size, and some of them will customize not only looking at by city size, but their neighbors. Like, for example, in Brooklyn Park, the city personnel director looked at not only the city size, Brooklyn Park and possibly Maple Grove and Apple Valley, but also Brooklyn Center and other cities in northwest Hennepin County. So many of them use it to look at how they are in line with their neighbors or with the region. And they're looking at salary ranges and benefits. Many look at benefits and ask questions. A lot of the things in the benefit information is yes or no question. Like, do you have a bereavement policy? So they may call their neighbor or another city saying, what do you do? So there's a lot of information exchange. And what also helps is there is a group called the TUG group, which is the unnamed group. And these are all, that's what they call themselves, TUG. And it's a very informal group of all the human resources people in the cities and counties, and they meet monthly. And this is a major topic of discussion for them. And they have websites and emails, so a lot of this information is back and forth. So it's well used. And if it wasn't being used, we wouldn't do it. But we've been doing it for 36 years.
Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, as I've said before, I think we ought to get out of this business. But in terms of thinking about some options to put on the table, assuming we don't just repeal the salary cap, are there benchmarks for total administrative costs for cities sort of across the country? You know, when businesses are trying to figure out whether they're performing well, they set up ratios of X to revenues, or and so I ask the question not because I think we ought to put something into place, but if there was a trade-off that somebody was going to offer, would it be, instead of looking at the salaries of individual employees, if the concern was restraining the costs of government, would it be better to look at some kind of ratio of administrative expense for a county or a city to its total operations as a way of approaching this problem?
Does anybody on the committee or the working group have any response? Yes.
Well, yes, Madam Mayor. Mayor, I'm sorry. That's Madam, we say that a lot.
You actually really call me Linda. You know? Okay. we're not a committee of we're working
group. In Apple Valley, we're used to Madam Mayor. So,
okay.
But Linda, I don't have any. I think that's a great approach.
No.
I have no idea how it would work out, and I suspect the staff may have some idea, but I'd be willing to take a look at that.
Okay.
I think we'd come out okay, personally.
Madam Chair, I think it's a useful concept to pursue. I do want to caution, though, that there are some limitations on the information because the cities or the counties or other local governments are not necessarily comparable. I mean, we can do comparisons based on the size of the community in terms of the number of households or the population, but there are distinct features of the government. For example, at the county level, Carver County is relatively unique in that it handles all public safety and all prosecution functions for all the cities within its confines. That's relatively unique, and as a consequence, it's going to have kind of a different ratio than other counties that don't do that service that's in most counties in the state are provided by the cities themselves. So I just caution that there are some limitations in that approach.
Yes.
Tom Hedges. I guess it would be helpful for me to know, and maybe you can, maybe you can't offer this, is an outright total repeal something that politically just is going to have a difficult time ever mustering the test? Or if that's the case, then I think, as Senator Kelly said, maybe we need – I can't think of other alternatives unless I know that an outright repeal is out of the question. If we feel politically just never going to make it, then it seems to me we do need to put a lot of energy into ideas like you're suggesting. My concern about different variations from an outright repeal is I don't want doer cities, counties – to spend all their time trying to figure out if we met the test correctly. I think a lot of energy and a lot of good time, productive time is challenged in that process. So I think the guidelines would have to be very, very clear, very succinct, so that we knew exactly what the playing field is, so we know how to calculate that if we do that.
Well, as I've heard the discussions of this topic over the years.
Mm-hmm.
There are two concepts that support it. One is the hierarchical compensation one, which, you know, the governor is the senior public official in the state, and nobody else, in theory, should make more than the governor. Now, we have lots of exceptions to that. The football coach at the U makes more
mm-hmm.
than
yeah.
more than the president or the governor does. So we recognize the existence of a market for football coaches and other personnel. But nonetheless, as we talk about this stuff, this hierarchical nobody should make more than the governor thing still comes up.
Mm-hmm.
So assuming you could cope with that argument, then the next argument is the one related to restraining the cost of government, and that having the salary cap for local government officials helps hold down the cost of local government. My personal belief is that that's a job that ought to be left up to the elected officials of the local government. But that's a view not universally held in the legislature. So the trick, and Keith pointed out a potential problem, but Keith, that would show up in the revenues for the county too. So if you did it as a ratio of certain kinds of administrative, it's a good question. You'd have huge definitional problems the same way we do now with the mm-hmm. the cap. You know, what's in and what's out.
Right.
I think, especially as the state's finances continue to be constrained and there are ongoing discussions about local government aid, there will be there's plenty of ammunition for the folks who want to retain the cap because of its tie to holding down the costs of local government. So if you were going to respond to that argument, the question would be what alternative approaches would there be? And yes, they'd be complicated, and if we reviewed them, we might conclude that they're more trouble than would be worth as an alternative. But maybe that's something that this study could usefully do, is point out the problems with the approach we've got, but also point out that there aren't any good alternatives too, and having actually analyzed an alternative might be a good part of the process.
Okay. Gene. Yeah, Beth, did you want to say something?
Well, Madam Chair.
Forgive my voice. It's cutting in and out. I have some bronchitis. I'm medicated, but I... dangerous.
Well, Madam Chair, the other thing, just in response to Mr. Hedges, is that if you look at the law as it was passed, it does say to evaluate alternatives, including. So if we just come in here and say, well, is there political will to eliminate the cap, we certainly have not evaluated any alternatives or carried forward what the law set forth that we're supposed to do.
That's a good point. I was thinking more from the... I'm sorry.
That's all right, Tom.
I was just thinking, exactly, and I was kind of cutting to the more the political will. I think looking at the alternatives makes a lot of sense, and it seems to me that just the outright repeal has been something that's been very difficult to muster very much support for. So I understand, you know, looking at the alternatives and meeting the intent of the law, too, so...
Yeah, as I said earlier, I mean, it has tended to be not a partisan.
Right.
I don't think you can really predict where people fall on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're governor, you happen to believe in it, whichever party you are. Any of the three parties, you pick them. They tended, I think, to think it was a really good idea. But I think at this point it would be difficult to pass in both bodies and have signed. But I don't know. If we it got to the Senate floor, I don't know if it would succeed. Steve, was it your bill? Is it?
You know, I had raising the cap bill.
Okay.
It's been a while since we took a run at a repealer.
But your bill to raise the cap made it to the floor.
Made it off the floor.
Yeah. Okay.
And Senator Stevens, it had bipartisan support. Senator Stevens, principally. I think he was a co-author.
So, Gene, you were
going to
say something.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kelly mentioned the link to state aid and local government aid. Since 2003, here in the metropolitan area, prior to 2003, four cities in the metropolitan area were off the formula, didn't receive LGA. With the changes and the reductions, there are now 88 cities without local government aid receipts from the state. There'd probably be more as we phase the formula out. So the link between LGA and what cities do, I think, is getting a little bit weaker.
How many dollars are represented by that?
In the metropolitan area, we think there's about a $110 million reduction. That includes you take 201 as a base year and use LGA and HACA and compare it to 203, there's about 130 down to 18 million. So about a $112 million reduction.
Thank you very much. That even shows up on legislative budget lines. So, yes.
Madam Chair, I'd like to follow up on Mr. Hedges' comments, too, if we're talking about the political reality of things. Greg mentioned earlier in his comments that maybe we should look at the fact that, you know, we should make some comments or some judgments of the governors, or where the governors paid. I don't know how realistic that is. I'd be the first one to tell you that I think the governor's job is a political amount. It has nothing to do with reality, and he is grossly underpaid. I only knew, of all the commissioners, the only one I knew was Dan McElroy, before he was the chief of staff, and at $108,000, I thought McElroy was one of the great steals of all time. So when I look at the 108, I believe it's 108 for commissioners, and I look at 120 for the governor, I have no problem saying those are politically set. And what governor is going to run and say, please raise my salary? That just... And so we have this atmosphere where we're pretending that the governor's salary and the commissioner's salaries are based on some realistic level, and I just don't believe they are at all. So how much time do we spend on something like that? I don't... I'm willing to say they ought to double Tim's salary. And quite frankly, most people in the metro area wouldn't even notice. And most people wouldn't take the job for that amount anyway. So... I don't know. That's just the way I feel. We Apple Valley salaries like that just don't spook people.
No, I know. I think the issue isn't even how much. It's if you said we're going to double or we're going to increase by 50%, that's all people would hear rather than...
I understand, but we have a we have a president of the United States who has the power to send people to war that makes an insignificant sum of money when you compare the awesome power of that office. And so... What I'm saying is that governors, senators, and these folks, these are politically set levels. They really have nothing to do with reality.
No, you're right on. We won't even go into legislative salary. Speaking of political. So, is it... Ms. Offerdahl's turn. I guess we've got that on the list here.
Sure. Thank you. Laura. Well, like Jean mentioned, the League does work with the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities on the Metropolitan City Survey. We also conduct in-house at the League a Greater Minnesota Salary Survey each year. We've been doing it for quite some time, longer, I think, than even Jean mentioned, I think since the 50s. And it does contain both some salary and benefit information for various benchmark positions in city government. In the 2004 survey that that we're compiling right now, or actually preparing to publish right now, so it's not, I don't have it ready to present to you today, but we include information from 352 cities in greater Minnesota. 237, that seven of them are under 2,500 population, and 115 are over 2,500 population. We compose two volumes for small and large cities. The survey reports information on salary data for benchmark positions, as I mentioned. In large cities, we look at 19 job families with 62 different positions. And in the small cities survey, we look at 14 job families with 52 different positions. It includes a summary of the position responsibilities and duties. We look at the range of pay for each position, the number of steps in the position, and the maximum time needed to reach the or the time needed to reach the maximum rate in the range. We also look at various types of benefits, like Jean mentioned, sick, vacation, leave, bereavement, mileage allowance, tuition reimbursement, a number of different benefits. And we could also prepare for the committee information on the average salary increase by employee group, either the labor unit or non-union groups of employees. We can look at the average increase over time. We think that this could be useful to the committee as well. While there are very few cities in greater Minnesota that are experiencing this problem at this time, there are a handful that are having some issue with the salary cap, and so we could identify those positions, take a look at the cities, the profile of the cities where these employees work, the extent to which compression might be occurring in some of those cities. Those are some of the kinds of things that we could pull from the Greater Minnesota Survey that might be useful to members on the committee.
Any questions, or Mr. Carlson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Jean said, nine counties participate along with the metropolitan cities in the Metropolitan Area Salary Survey. And two of those cities are actually outside the metropolitan area, being St. Louis County and Olmsted County. The only other distinction besides participating in the survey on all the positions that are included in the survey that they have in common with the cities is there's an additional salary an additional county supplement done for those positions that are unique to the counties in the human services, public health area, and welfare administration area. I have done some analysis of the most recent survey. The survey was just completed or published a few weeks ago, and we are, in fact, in the process of just distributing that information to our individual counties right now. Our association, ACTS, has the agent for all the counties except Hennepin, which deals with the survey on their own. And so the document that I passed out called Effective Salary Cap on Selected Counties and Positions is what I'd like to refer to right now. Nine counties do participate in the survey. And on pages one through five are positions that I pulled from the survey, as well as some other positions that are not covered by the current survey, but I knew the cap would be an issue for them, and I requested the human resources directors in the counties to provide me with information for those positions, and I have not had an opportunity to get responses from all of them at this time. But anyways, the information is then summarized on page 5, and then the rest of this really speaks to an issue that I think we've raised with the subcommittee in the past, and that's one of compression. And to basically describe what compression is as you might well imagine or know, there's a hierarchy, a system within compensation systems at any entity. That's obviously true for counties and cities. And there has to be some rationale to that system, with people at the higher end of the hierarchy having greater salaries or greater salary ranges than those below them who they may supervise. The problem with the cap is that basically it's placed an arbitrary limit on those at the top. In the instance of counties, that's the county administrator. He is the top appointed official in the county. And then all those underneath them, including division heads, have potentially an artificial constraint put on their salaries as a result of this cap. The market may dictate they should be higher, but the hierarchy of the compensation system says, well, no, you can't be higher than the county administrator. So they are effectively capped too. And the rest of the information in this handout basically speaks to it. On pages 6 through 10, it's the same information for each position, but then it tells you at page 10 the number of positions in each one of the counties that are reported. These are not the universe of positions. There are probably more for several of these counties that are at the cap. But, for example, of the 11 positions for which information was reported for Hennepin County, seven of those positions are currently at or above the cap. As some of the longer-term members might recall, administrative exceptions have been allowed to Hennepin County for several positions. Okay, then going on to pages 11 through 15, this looks at the ranges for the positions, not what's currently being paid, but what is eligible to be paid, the minimum, and, well, this is just solely looking at the maximum. And again, the information is summarized on the bottom of page 15. And this, for example, shows for Hennepin County, of, again, the 11 positions for which ranges are reported. There are not always ranges for every position, particularly like elected positions like the sheriff or the county attorney. It's common that there are not established ranges for those positions. But anyways, for Hennepin County, for the 11 positions for which ranges were reported, eight of those ranges, the top of the range, would be in excess of the cap. So the market and the rationality of the compensation system within Hennepin County suggests that at least 8 of those officials should have the potential for being paid more than the cap, but the cap says that they can't. And I should further state, some of the counties say forget about the cap and establishing the ranges, and they set it at what they think the market dictates, what the responsibility of the positions. Other counties, such as Ramsey, is frequently an example of this, just says the top of the range is equal to the cap, even though the market may dictate otherwise. 7 out of the 8 positions for which ranges are reported are indicated here as being at or above the cap, with the, I think for all of these, they're basically at the cap as the top of the range. Going on then to pages 16 through 20 then, this becomes kind of more illustrative of the issue of compression. Again, as I said, the top official, appointed official in each county is the county administrator, and rationality suggests that everybody who he or she supervises should have a salary and a range below his. But yet, when you look at the data summarized on the bottom of page 20, in Ramsey County, for example, of the 9 positions for which data was reported, 5 have compensation within 95% of the administrator. The final group of pages, pages 21 through 25, show the number of officials who are at the top of their current range. Now, this is not only a phenomena of the cap, but the cap clearly does influence this. And again, just to pick out an example here, in St. Louis County right now, 8 positions had ranges reported for them, and of those 8, every one of the current occupants is right at the top of the range currently. And this includes any adjustment for longevity. Olmsted has nearly a similar problem with the 8 positions for which ranges are reported. 6 of the incumbents are currently at the top of the range. I just go through this information to put it more in black and white, the problems that the cap is creating. It's not just an issue for the top position of the administrator. It is an issue for a number of other positions in the counties, and it's not just an issue of the pay. It is an issue of the rationality, the logic of their compensation system that's being adversely affected by the cap. That's my comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this point.
Any questions?
Could I? Go ahead, sir.
Yes, Mr. Yoakum.
I'm sorry. Kurt Yoakum with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I just wanted to add on the top of a couple of things that Keith had said. Touting my own organization, we too do our own survey, and we do it in-house. Mr. Carlson had mentioned a couple counties, that Olmsted and St. Louis County, obviously in outstate Minnesota. Stearns County in greater Minnesota is also facing a situation with an administrator just right at the cap. Clay County is still, they compete directly, obviously, with North Dakota. They're not at the cap yet. They're still probably about 10,000-12,000 below that for the administrator, but obviously over the next couple of years, they're going to start butting against that, and they're in direct competition with a state that I don't believe has any type of cap, and we'll be looking at more of our border issues. And then to echo with what Mr. Carlson said about the compression issue, we are seeing that quite a bit throughout the areas, I think. Two of the counties, Mr. Carlson mentioned Ramsey County, but two of the counties that were denied exemptions this year from their administrators, Washington County within this year, I believe, will have 4 people bumping up against the administrator's salary, 3 to 4, and then I believe next year an additional 2 to 3 after that, or vice versa. So they are seriously facing compression. Mr. Carlson already mentioned Ramsey County, but we are seeing this, as I said, also in Stearns County. Clay County will be an issue probably within a few years. I'm not sure if any of our other border counties are quite to that point yet, on, let's say, in the southeastern area, but those are things to be considering.
And Betsy, did you?
Madam Chair, mine is more a data question than anything. I see the dollar figures and I hear what you're saying, but the other pieces that I think need to be addressed, because they do play a significant role, is the recruitment and retention issue. Are we having a problem with recruitment? Are we having a problem with retention? It seems as if we have several people bumping the salary cap, which means they have been in their position for a significant length of time. So, but how are recruitment and retention actually affected, or are they? And the second piece that we don't have but maybe is coming from some places, although there are not any caps in place anywhere else, Minnesota, this is unique to, what are some comparative figures from comparative states? And I don't think we see any of that at this point yet.
Madam Chair, I think Ms. Offerdahl on the next thing is going to offer some information on national data that provides that comparison that you're looking for. In terms of problems of recruitment currently, I can give you one specific example and then cite a general issue that I think many levels of local government are facing. One of the county officials who came to request a exception from the cap is David Twa, the current Ramsey County Administrator. Curiously, he had actually been granted an exception to the cap in his previous position as St. Louis County Administrator, and then when he shifted or took the position with Ramsey County, and the county requested on his behalf an exception for him, it was denied by the Department of Employee Relations. And in all frankness, that just kind of defies credulity in my point of view. But
Mr. Carlson, what years were you know the years? I mean, of St. Louis?
Mr. Twa's exception for St. Louis, I don't have the document in front of me, but it was about 2000 that I believe the exception was granted for his position at St. Louis County, and the request for Ramsey was made 2003-2004. The other thing that I do want to point out in terms of recruitment, shortly after taking the position with Ramsey, before he had actually moved over to that position, he was offered a position in California that paid substantially more. I think to his credit, he believed that he had made a commitment to Ramsey and went there despite the substantial financial penalty. The other more general issue that I think is worthwhile bringing to the attention of the working group is that counties, cities, I don't think are alone in the phenomena that we're facing an aging workforce. Where many of our top-level managers are getting towards retirement age. And we're going to have a great, great deal of difficulty recruiting their successors because of this issue, the compensation cap. A very clear one is in the county engineer, director of public works. The private sector just pays far, far more than what is available in the public sector currently in these positions, particularly with the cap. We're asking for all sorts of exceptions, not only to this issue, but for an exception from the current provision of the pension law that once you are reemployed after you retired, if it's with a governmental unit, you have an offset against your pension. One of our potential recruitment areas is basically to get our retirees to come back and provide us the services that we need. And again, another cap is working to our detriment in filling these soon-to-be vacant positions.
Yes. If I may, on the recruitment, a lot of eyes on me when they talked about retirement. I am one of those that will reach the rule of 90 next year, though I'm not planning anything in terms of next fall, but probably not too much after that. We have that workforce that you described. I've been in Eagan a long time, and our department directors have. We had until, well, we've always maintained a salary compensation schedule of the city administrator being 16% higher than department directors for a long time. Right now it's 2.2% is the differential, and that will probably January of next year, everybody will be at the cap. We just went through an experience. Our director of Parks and Recreation retired in March, close to the cap. We thought, you know, Egan, nice Parks and Recreation program, good staff, good infrastructure. They'll be lined up at the door looking for that position. We were absolutely wrong. We went through a recruitment. We could not attract people from cities that we felt of a comparable size. You know, we're 66,000. We need a director who has some experience in a larger city, larger infrastructure, that type of thing. We had to stop the process, go out, hire an executive recruiter who went and talked to people in cities of 30 to 40,000, tried to talk their directors into applying without, I mean, I could get statements from them. We heard it from time and time again. Why would I move, take on more responsibility, understanding that the compensation will not be any greater? It'll be capped anyway. That was a real issue that came back. We, long story short, went through an interview process since then. We've scrapped the whole hiring process. We have a vacancy right now. We don't know what we're going to do. That is a real live recruitment issue, and we're sitting with the director of public works, the director of finance, and the city administrator in our city, all of whom are reaching the retirement eligibility age in the next year or two. City managers that I can speak to in the state of Minnesota, talking to executive recruiters, the first thing they'll tell you is, or tell us, there just isn't competition from outside of Minnesota looking at these positions, the Egan positions in Minnesota. Lakeville just went through it. Woodbury went through it. Not to say that, and this is a tough argument because it's the argument I know that you're hearing from your colleagues either in the House or the Senate, but didn't they fill the position? Yes. But I think what we're denying city councils is a good field of candidates. You know, Tom Goodwin wearing his city council hat, if his administrator were to leave, could he fill the position? Sure, you know, after a time. But shouldn't he be given the opportunity, shouldn't Apple Valley be given the opportunity, Egan and the other city, to enjoy a wide range of candidates and their council knows what's best for their city in terms of what they need to pay to attract and all those sorts of things. And so the recruitment is a real live issue, and I am very, very concerned about, and I think part of the reason I'm here, I mean, my PERA has already been affected for 3 years by this. I may not be around long enough to enjoy any kind of a salary increase, and I understand that. I'm here for the future. Sound like I'm running for something here. For the future of Minnesota, and I'm not. I don't envy your responsibility. But I worry about the future of our city and other cities and counties, and we just... So this recruitment thing is very, very live and a real problem.
That's very dramatic. You haven't filled that position for
We have not filled that position.
You know, what strikes me, too, Mr. Goodwin commented that, I mean, the governor's salary is a political number.
Very simply.
But a position of public works or park and rec, those aren't political positions.
Right.
Those are positions that people, they go to school, and they work their way up and have real solid credentials to get to those positions. And so, but we're forcing them into political with their salaries are governed by politics. Yes, Mr. Goodman.
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Worgan. I would like to speak to that. We don't have any direct experience as of late because we've been fortunate to have our positions filled for some time. But anecdotally, I've talked to mayors and council members from other cities. Tom has mentioned a few that say we just don't get the pool of applicants we used to. For example, one of our top major suburban areas would historically, say 5, 6, 8 years ago, get a pool of applicants that would include New York and Chicago and places where they pay well, and you would get some very experienced people. You'd get a critical number. Sometimes you would get 50 or 60, and you'd say, how are we ever going to cut this down? That's just not happening anymore. doesn't mean they're not getting good people. It doesn't mean that at all. I would never say that. But is it getting worse? Yeah. And when you talk to fellow council members and mayors that say, wow, we used to get people from suburban L.A., and boy, now we get a lot of young kids looking at it. Yeah. And is it a problem? Yeah. Are things falling apart yet? No. I don't think any of us want to get to that point, though.
Senator Kelly.
For purposes of structuring the staff work on this, I'd be interested in getting the reactions of others. There's the practical problems that folks have been pointing out that are the consequences of the salary cap that we have to address. But maybe one of the things we could usefully do in our analysis is Tom Hedges mentioned the advice that they get from human resources professionals does have a hierarchical approach, mm-hmm. does lead to the compression that that Keith was talking about, and we're getting that compression by treating local government officials as being in the same hierarchy with the governor.
Yeah.
So maybe one of the questions is, from an economic or from a human resources perspective, is that a good way of looking at things? Does that make any sense to think that a city manager and other city or county officials are in the same hierarchy with the governor for human resources purposes? And maybe if we address that concept, that would help along with the practical issues. Because it is one of the options to talk about raising the governor's salary, and that would provide some relief from a practical perspective. But what troubles me a lot about this law, the cap, is the conceptual problems with it. And so I'd like at least part of the report to address the problems with how we're thinking about it, let alone its impact on individual cities or counties.
No, I think that's important, Steve. Mayor Breedy, did you want to say something?
Oh, I was just going to concur with what my colleagues over here have said. We have right now nobody leaving, but a lot of people looking in Rochester with a couple positions that they've gotten exemptions to it. And the sad part about it is we not only lose them from oftentimes the number one livable city in the United States, Rochester, we lose them from the state. We don't have them then even in Minnesota. They're gone elsewhere. And I know our city attorney is right near the top, so he's starting to look. The finance director is looking, and we have public works and a public utility. And fortunately, but we're going to be facing that. Our administrator is at the age that he doesn't want to move anyplace else, and he's gotten the exemption. When it comes time to replace him, it'll be difficult. We'll have probably that opening for a while, too, unless something has changed. And sometimes these formulas lead to the law of unintended circumstances, too, with their consequences.
And we may need to get more data on it. But I'm interested in, people have talked about the challenge of finding the pool of folks at the top in the senior management positions. What's happening with respect to the entry level, and I mean entry level for people who would, likely end up in the management track, because that has an impact on the size of the pool available as well.
Yes.
If I may speak to that, at our state, city, and county managers conference that was held in May, the theme of that conference was how to get more people into the profession, I mean, and we had committees. I happen to be on a committee. A lot of discussion. We brought professors from Moorhead, Hamline, Mankato, University of Minnesota at Mankato State, or Mankato, to the table, who have long time been professors of urban studies, public administration, and watch young people, you know, move toward the profession. What they told us, and this is a reason, and was mentioned several times in the conversation, that young people are not seeking the careers in local government because of the limitations. They're going to the nonprofits. So there is a migration, in our opinion, away from local government to nonprofits, where there's many of us that are just, and most of us in this room are cut for public service. That's why we're here. And they're moving away from the local government or county government into nonprofits. And that was some pretty hard data. I think some of us were at that meeting that heard that.
Interesting. So that, yes,
just a curiosity question. When you say that, why moving to nonprofit instead of private business?
I think the interest, as they explained it to us, in wanting to seek public administration, maybe they had a political science under degree, want to go to Hamline and get their public administration degree. What used to be flocking into city management internships, they're seeking nonprofits to go to. If you look at the salaries of executive directors of non-for-profits, you're looking at 200, 300, 400,000, and no salary caps and those sorts of things. So the there's just greater opportunities. And I think the other aspect of this is, with levy limits, the uncertainty of local government finance, and all the restrictions, there hasn't been the ability to generate assistant positions and the things that organizations need that young people will pursue, entry-level people will want to pursue. So they see kind of a dead end right now in city-county management, and that's concerning.
Yes, Mr. Goodwin.
A couple points, Madam Chair. First of all, I don't know how many you've seen the schedule of salaries for nonprofits. I think it would be a very useful piece of information for this committee to have. I saw it and I thought, well, I screwed up again. I should have gone in the United way. That's what I should have done. You see that schedule and it just takes your breath away. And we understand there's no legislative limits for it. But I would request that we all have that schedule as members of this committee so we're all aware of it. The second thing I'd like to talk about as far as, and it's always mentioned, how do we keep government, local government costs down? Again, I'm going to talk political here, and we're all political. I think if we look at it from a practical point of view, this is a pittance. Where's the real money in local government? It's in the big unions. That's where it is. The public safety unions, the public works unions. Are those folks going to be impacted? Not for an awful long time. Now, their bosses, the head of it, are going to start being impacted. But I look at this and I think, are we going to lose the people on top that have the creative ability to maybe see us through some of these rough administratives and financial times because of a symbolic act? And that's where we are. I know where the real money is. I sit through labor negotiations with the public safety unions and public work unions. That's where the dough is. This few bucks on top is, and I understand the importance of symbolism, and I understand the importance of politics. I've been an elected official for 20 years. We all know this. This is the game we play in. This is the field we play in. But if we're going to be honest here, I think it's the same kind of discussion we had earlier with the commissioner's salaries and the governor's salary. We have to realize there's an entire, it's just a whole different set of rules. I know when I see administrators leave, this is something I was joking about with our city administrator the other day. I said, you know, another thing we ought to talk about in this law is have a codicil of the law that says, hey, where are you going next? Where does an administrator go? It usually goes he or she. A lot of women in the field, by the way, and they're doing a great job. Where do they go next? They usually go to a bigger city for more money. Where do governors go next? Gee, the last governor we had left took a $2 million contract for a TV show that never got on the air. I'm always very fond of reading about Governor Ernie Carlson, who I had tremendous respect for, about this board of directors he's on or that board of directors or where. So we have to look at these things. I just, the comparison is just so wrong because these folks, governors, have opportunities for United States senators. They have opportunities for huge opportunities in the private sector that just aren't open to these fellows, just aren't. And so to keep making this comparison is just, it's political and it's really starting to hurt us, and I just don't see the good reasons for it.
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, I just want to make one further observation, and maybe you can move on. The one thing that I failed to mention is, and this group should take into consideration, is the contradictory effect of the salary cap vis-a-vis the state's pay equity law.
Absolutely.
Many of the a significant portion of the individuals that just show up on the data that I shared with you are female. For example, the finance director in Ramsey County is in a capped position right now. She quite possibly has a pay equity issue. In effect, you're telling us as local governments two things at once. Pay people what they're worth according to pay equity, but don't pay them what they're worth because of the cap.
The emperor has no clothes.
Wouldn't be the first time they were inconsistent.
Honest?
So, Mr. Hubinger, where shall we go from here? Our members. Actually, I shouldn't just put this as Craig's decision.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. But I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry. You do have a presentation, Ms. Ahmadal. I'm sorry.
I'll make it very brief. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure we covered one of the questions that Senator Oregon brought up earlier, and that is the comparison piece that is part of the charge of this working group looking at what's going on in other cities and counties and other states. And we do have access. We just received the data from the International City County Management Association. They do an annual survey as well. It's just of salaries. There is no benefit information covered. But it does, for 2004, include 4,172 cities and 1,116 counties. So it should give us some good data to look at providing some comparisons with similarly sized cities in Minnesota. I'm going to hand out something that our HR, our Member Services Director, put together that we used throughout the session. It provides some comparison based on the 2003 salary survey from the ICMA. And it looks at central cities like Minneapolis and other central cities around the country. It looks at larger suburban communities, smaller suburban communities, and freestanding cities. It gives you some sense of the kind of competition that's out there for the top-level administrative jobs in these cities. So we could do something similar to what's in this memo for this working group. We could broaden this list to include other cities. We need to update the information, obviously, with the new survey information. And we should include more county information in here as well. This focuses on cities. But it does give you a good picture of what's going on out there, and the fact that the fact that Minnesota is the only state with a cap is having an impact on our ability to be competitive with other cities across the nation. But that data is sorted by several different positions. We can look at the top level position, but there are 23 positions that are covered in both city and county management type positions that are covered in the survey. We can look at the region. We can look at specific divisions within a region. We can look at state and by population. There are a lot of ways to kind of divvy up the information. So it would definitely be helpful, I think, as we look to compare similar cities across the country and counties.
So is that something you'll have for us to look at? Or?
Yep, I think that's something we could work on and get to you before the next meeting.
That would be really instructive. Yeah. You know, I know that it's not always apples and apples, but I can look, I mean, just right off the top of my head and look at Des Moines and versus Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty shocking.
Mm-hmm.
to me to see that differential, right there. Because Des Moines is something I think we can relate to. That's, you know, probably lots of the same kinds of issues, and in a rural state, a large metropolitan area, there's just all sorts of similarities. I guess I don't know so well. Kansas City, Missouri, probably.
And maybe what we could do as well as just looking at the pure salary data, is to give you some sense of the profile of these cities, because I think in some of the communities in Wisconsin in particular, where they may have a little lower salaries, they have a different structure of government in many of those cities, where there's a strong mayor that also gets compensated pretty well. And so those are things that the committee may want to take into consideration.
I think some of those definitions or background would be helpful too. You know, I can't make a whole lot of sense out of the comparisons here, except for a handful of cities where I see something. Yes.
I would also suggest the counties. I don't want to jump the gun on this, but I think we have to understand, because Wisconsin we're going to be compared against. My last position before I went to the private sector was the executive assistant to the Racine County Executive. Mm. I used to love that title because I used to kid my boss I had executive in the title more times than he did. But he was the county administrator, and as such, he was always the highest paid in the county. A very popular option in Wisconsin is the elected county executive form, where these people have tremendous power, but what happens is their salaries get froze for 4 years. And what happened to my boss is that he went from being the highest paid administrative official in Racine County to the sixth or seventh highest paid within a period of 4 years. And so the problem with that, that's the same problem that Laura mentioned for the cities. And I think we got this problem with the mix and match, because wherever you have a lot of elected officials as the chief administrative official, and we can all argue about whether that's good or bad, there's political realities to those salaries.
Right.
And I think it's really hurt us here being compared to Wisconsin. We just don't have the same political reality.
Bert.
Madam Chair, this is by no means intended as a substitute for any of the information that Laura has, but I did hand out a packet a little while ago. And on there, one is a memo that Washington County had provided Dewar and the committee, I think this last spring, from a recruiting agency that deals specifically with this type of issue, exactly outlining what exactly their pitfalls are for recruiting in Minnesota for both cities and counties. And there are several other charts in here that do cross comparisons as far as similar size counties. These are specifically with things that Ramsey and Washington counties have put forward, comparison with what certain cities in the region are paying for city managers, but then also comparisons with counties of similar size across the country. And the only other thing is to build off of Tom and Laura's point, is Minnesota counties are also somewhat unique in the nation as being one of about a dozen states in the country that use counties to administer all their state services.
Absolutely.
So there's an extra burden, extra responsibility with Minnesota's counties that we do have to take into effect also.
Interesting. Yes, Mr. Carlson.
I just want to point out, I think the discussion about the difference between elected and career officials is pertinent here, but our system conspires to have the exactly opposite effect. There was an attorney general's opinion of a couple of years ago that said the salary cap does not apply to elected officials, and consequently the elected county attorneys and possibly in the future some elected county sheriffs are saying that they should receive compensation in excess of the cap. Right now, you have three county attorneys in Minnesota that receive compensation in excess of the cap.
And, of course, we have just wonderful rationale for why we do some and don't do others, right? No. And I think I really don't know that our legislative colleagues understand all that or understand the inconsistencies of how administrations and legislature itself have responded to those things. It seems to me that we need to hear from some folks who don't have the bias of wanting to have necessarily the best people in local government you can have, that maybe we need to hear from some people that do the recruitment. I mean, they're looking to do business, I understand, but their reason for being is not public service. And it would be good to hear, I think, from the professionals who are trying to recruit people for counties and for cities. I don't know. We certainly can't require them to come here. We can only ask. But I think if you have some thoughts on who would be good. Mm-hmm. Steve.
One of my constituents, Jim Brimmeyer.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. We're just mentioning that, too.
We're just mentioning him.
He's sort of the major player in this.
He's a former city manager, former city council member, and does executive searches.
So. Mm-hmm.
Well, see, there is a place to go after you camp out.
Which is one of the reasons he went there.
Take a step out.
That's great. But I think it would behoove us to hear, some of that outside perspective as well. Mr. Ranieri.
Madam Chair, we can get a list of some of the folks I'm talking to, city managers, who are the recruiters here in Minnesota. One definitely is Mr. Brimmeyer's group. There are other groups. Some of our fiscal consultant firms now are moving into this area, too, and others that we can talk to also get in the list.
Okay.
Senator Worgen early on asked about retention, and I have done a rather informal survey as people leave, why they leave, where they're going. I looked at over the last couple of years, we've had about 10 city managers move on. Three retired, and it's interesting. In Stillwater, that person who retired ran for the county board and is now an elected official. In Woodbury, that person's retired and is moving into the nonprofit business. And in Lakeville, that person's moving into the private sector and housing development. The other persons all left the state.
They didn't retire because they were 65 or 70 or anything like that? No. Because it was time to retire.
Time to retire. I think pensions all meshed in. The other folks all moved out of state. The Moorhead city manager a couple of years ago moved to California to become the city manager in Davis, California, with a salary above the cap. The Duluth city administrator moved to Lake County, Illinois, in about 2001, and his salary and pension were in excess of $150,000. The Oak Park Heights city manager moved to Illinois and in a similar range of salary. Roseville city manager moved to Washington State, and the numbers there are well over $150,000 when he left. The Burnsville deputy moved to become the La Crosse County administrator, again, salary over the cap. And the St. Louis Park city manager left to become assistant city manager in the city of Virginia Beach, Virginia, well over $150,000. And the Hopkins city manager just left to become the city manager in Lakeville.
That's a pretty definitive list. You just good survey.
And also in Richfield, they're having a difficult time, just like Mr. Hedges suggested. He's having a difficult time recruiting a recreation director. They're having a difficult time getting a fire chief.
Pardon me?
Getting a fire chief.
Okay. Ms. Hoppertall, did you want to say?
Yeah, I was just going to mention, Madam Chair, in addition to the executive search firm professionals, you may also want to consult and hear from some of the compensation professionals, the folks that work with our cities on comp plans and those kinds of things. Probably would be helpful, useful information for the committee.
Any other thoughts from folks here as we try to move forward, or as we do move forward? This has been very helpful. Yes, Mr. Goodwin.
Well, I'm not sure exactly when this would tie in best. I think we're going to have a few meetings, but I might as well throw it out here for what it's worth. We all talk about who should control what, and I know in our area we have Republican legislators. We have a legislator who just became a senator a few days ago. And when you hear them on the stump, local control, local control, local, it's all I hear. It's all I hear. Local control. And as I've told our state representative and our senator both, I'm more than willing to sit up there as a council member and say, I think this person should make this much. And believe me, in the small weekly newspapers that we all get. If you don't think that isn't the front page in large letters, you're kidding yourself.
No, I get one of those in my community, too.
We get two. And my point is that you have five members of the Apple Valley City Council that says, we'll take that responsibility. You're not helping us out here. Let us do that. And if there is a political axe to fall on anybody's neck, it's my neck. And when I dovetail that with the fact that savings, it's, you know, it's symbolic at best. And I get this reaction from our legislators. Oh, I know where you're coming from. We really like local control, but you know, come on, folks. Does the majority party in the House believe in it or not? It seems to me that as an elected official, it wouldn't be a bad thing to say. You know, the folks on the Apple Valley City Council are going to decide this issue. You folks got a problem with it? Go see Goodwin. Here's his number. And I have no problem, nor do the other four. And I talked to all four before I came down here. They have no problem being where the buck stops. And this is one of the things that's very puzzling to me about this issue. This is not an issue that's hitting greater Minnesota at large right now. It's a few places. But it's an issue that hits us. And I'm saying, as a politician, I'll take the heat. Please, I'll take the heat.
Right. And I don't usually come to the defense of Republican legislators, but I know that people on my side of the aisle sometimes are guilty of it. If you want to talk about levy limits, for example, sure. That kind is the same things, the same kind of arguments get said. We're all for local control, except so, and actually even on salary things, I think that you probably I actually know who objects to higher salaries for anybody. So, anybody in management. So, I know it's not partisan, but I know your frustration. I mean, absolutely, that's hypocritical of us at best. Yes.
Oftentimes, though, the irony is, and I hear what you're saying, having sat on local government and now being in the Senate. But oftentimes, the irony is that the same people that want local control to raise more money locally object to any local government aid cut, because then they have to raise more money locally.
Well, that's true. Another codicil that I could add, it just so happens right today, at City of Apple Valley a few years ago, between LGA and the old homestead credit, we were at about $3.3 million in state aid. We're now down to zilch, except for the last little faux pas. Now we're back at 413. But if that zilch is fixed, we're back to zero. And I used to hear we had a state senator out there who's now a judge would say, you know, Tom, we're giving you some LGA, and I'd say, yeah, Dave, I understand, but you're not now. And so, and I understand that's a different issue, because out of state, the cities hopefully will continue to get substantial amounts. They're having tremendous problems. But where I sit right now in my chair, we got nothing. And yet we can't even decide these issues. And it's such a puzzlement for me.
Senator Kelly.
We should probably be careful to invite some proponents of the cap to explain what their rationale is and so forth. But after listening to the various arguments, I do think one of the benefits of sometimes doing a study is something we do because we can't get the real thing done.
Right.
But I do think
just sometimes
I do think that there will be a benefit to assembling in one place all this information.
Absolutely.
For purposes of taking whatever action we end up trying to do in the session, so that members have in one place all of the different angles on the issue and the related facts. It may have an impact on the outcome. We'll see.
Go ahead. Yes, Senator Wergen.
You know, I've never been real shy about taking an opposite point of view to draw things out, so I always appreciate hearing that. And I think we do need some balance. But the other thing I want to go back to is a little bit what Greg mentioned real early on. I think there is some value in discussing the governor's salary, because it affects state-level salaries as well. So I think there is some value in at least doing some discovery as to what that position is worth in the real world. Whether we ever use that or not, I think there's a value in taking a look at it to see how false a ceiling we have, if you will. Because if our ceiling is false, we really ought to know how.
Yeah. Yes.
Just a comment on that, too. I haven't done the numbers, or if I did, I don't recall what they are. But, you know, when former Governor Ventura decided not to accept his salary increase and essentially froze it, am I correct on that, or did the legislature freeze it at that time? Did he? I'm not sure what happened with that. Did he decide not to accept a salary increase and announce that? Or
the salary for the governor was last increased in 1998 before he took office. So he didn't have any decision about that at all.
So that 120 was not his choice.
I don't
think
anybody's rejected it.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, because we've maybe been operating under a different understanding, thinking that if it's the governor's choice not to accept the salary increase, that's different than the salary itself going up. But that apparently is not the case.
Okay. I only recall as seeking a salary for the First Lady. I don't recall what he did with his own.
But, yeah, I remember that.
But so anyway, we're going to meet at least a couple more times, and I want to know if this kind of a time is okay for people. I mean, we're going to be getting, since summer just started last week, or the end of last week, and it'll be over. You know, the state fair is, what, a month away, 5 weeks away. Does it work okay for people mornings and a weekday?
That's
okay.
Great.
Perfect. Okay. I appreciate your coming on this Friday. I work Monday through Thursday, and I can't abandon. I work with little ones in a park and rec program, actually.
Oh.
So I appreciate your being able to be here today, and thank everybody for participating. Is there any way maybe the folks sitting at the witness table can tell me has there ever been done a private sector versus public sector comparisons of descriptions? You know, we've heard the governor compared to a CEO of a corporation. Public works and city manager kinds of positions, there have to be, and human resources, those kinds of folks exist in the private sector as well. Seems to me there's been some study of that. I wonder if you have access or you can point us in a direction.
Madam Chair, in our salary survey, there are some jobs that are compared between the public sector to the private sector, to the federal government. Not all jobs, and we can look at that.
Right.
But I'm not sure if the city managers are compared to chief executive officer corporation, but like civil engineers are and office support for persons.
Right.
We can get that information.
Okay, because it seemed to me that public employees rank high at the lower levels compared to private sector, but when you get to management level, then the numbers come down in the public sector, if I'm recalling that. Senator Wergen.
Madam Chair, that's one of the things that, Keith, you might have access to several different counties that have done when we do the salary studies in order to make sure our pay equity is in line. Private sector is always included in those studies, so that would, you know, be some place to start.
And I'd also appreciate some sort of an analysis on that pay equity issue, the pay equity versus the salary cap. Be interesting to see that play, see how that plays out. So we'll be meeting, you think, in the next month or something? Within the next month, would be my guess. And probably on a Friday morning, if that's acceptable. Doesn't have to be, I guess, but for that. And we'll also try to get some house folks. Tell them that
they're probably outdoor napping.
That's true. Yeah, you know, but not on Friday morning. And I want to thank everybody for coming. See, but I think we'll have some interesting information again coming. If you have some thoughts about a perspective you think should be heard, or information we need to see, would like to see that nonprofit information. And I think I maybe saw it under a waiver request this last year. It's pretty startling.
I think the rest of the committee that isn't here today would love to see that.
Yeah.
It'll take your breath away.
they'll probably go after some folks there. But anyway, but it was eye-opening, that's for sure. So with that, we'll end. I want to thank you all for being here. Thanks.
Thank you.
Happy rest of summer here as we get to the next
meeting. Eat a cookie on the way.
Oh, yeah, take a cookie on the way.